and were wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
Email the show 24 hours a day at stocksandjocks@live.com or give us a call, 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. You can follow us on Twitter, @stocks_jocks, and be sure to friend the chief, Tom Howe, on Facebook. Stocks and Jocks, Monday through Friday mornings on 750 a.m. in Chicago in Northwest Indiana, 1240 a.m. downtown, and 1470 a.m. in Chicago Heights, or you can stream us live at stocksandjocks.net.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. Not sure what Mr. Jim Waller is doing over there on the board. He's doing something. Use the toes as well if you have to. S&P futures unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 15. Day after yet another apparently insider trading gambit by the creatures in Washington. But, you know, it's happening so much, I guess I'm getting immune to it. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning, sir.
How are you, bud?
I'm fighting a bit of a cold, so my voice is going to sound a little funny.
Yeah. What was the thing? Nothing's worse than the summer cold?
Yeah. It's one of those things. So, anyway, minor diversion.
How are you? I wanted to, by the way, you scooped the world last week on the issue with the plane crash. Because a lot of stuff came out the next day, exactly as you said. Now there's a bunch of, even though we have a couple of people on the show, not you, that have absolutely made their ruling as if they were a judge. There's a lot of pushback on that report as being incomplete. Have you been reading any of that stuff?
I have. I think there's still, so you know, there are obviously a lot of questions to be answered. The Indian media and government are pushing back hard on any kind of indication that this was a problem with one of their pilots, because it looks bad. You know, they want this to be a Boeing problem, and there are some aspects of this thing that obviously still, based on the stuff we've got from the CVR, the cockpit voice recorder, still don't make sense. You know, so there's. All the aircraft guys that I know have said the tossing of those switches is an intentional act, and the fact that they were cycled, in other words, they were turned off and then they were turned back on again, indicates that this was done deliberately and not accidentally. Theoretically it's possible that somebody or some software glitch reflected that this happened when in fact the switches weren't moved. Moved at all. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be coughing every now and then,
so
cutting my mic. But that's, and then you have the sort of funny language from the, it looks like the assistant pilot, the first officer, not the captain, but they think that it was the captain who may have cut the switches. Yeah, the first officer saying, "Why did you turn the switches off?" And the captain says, "I didn't." And so there are a number of inconsistencies in this record that I'm still not sure we're going to be able to resolve. But the focus now is on the mental state of the guys in the front end of the aircraft.
Well, I've heard, once you get on these, people have all these opinions on YouTube. It appears to me that there's three pieces of the returning drumbeat. Is that a proper way to say it? One is that the voice recorder that you just mentioned does sure not indicate that I'm taking this all down. Don't try and restart. Nobody said anything like that.
No, no.
And the other thing was, two guys now I've listened to said there have been a couple of instances where somewhere in the software, it was a chip or a unit of some kind of control, and boy, you got the wrong guy to talk. That actually there was a work order out to have the thing replaced, like at the next maintenance. And that there have been a couple of instances where one or both of the engines have cut off. And that the other thing was the whatever monitors or switches, the switches were pulled back, but the engines both cut off within 1 second. And they claim that it's physically impossible for someone to move both switches in 1 second.
I've seen that cutoff sequence demonstrated.
And, you can refute all this stuff because you're the expert, not me. And the third thing was, it looks like they were in a kind of a panic restart, which probably involved moving the switch back and moving it back up. And both of them were feverishly trying to start the stuff back up, which is a little odd if one of them was trying to take it down. So those are the three things that I essentially have heard.
Yeah. So none of those make sense.
If somebody's trying to take it down.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think either one, any of those make any or make more sense or even the same amount of logic as the explanation that one of the guys did it deliberately. And it looks like it's the senior captain who would have been the guy in the left seat. Here's the kicker on the chip issue. I have not seen a report that this aircraft was slated for some kind of maintenance that related to those fuel chips or the logic in the algorithm associated with that. Had there been something like that, had this been identified as an issue or even a potential issue from the flight data recorder, you would have seen they call it an air notice or emergency notice going out across the world to all the operators of that aircraft that this thing needed to be fixed or this had to be replaced.
Well, that was the guy's point. Was that it should have been, don't fly it with, again, this is one guy, it should have been sort of like the door on the DC-10. No, it's too important to wait until the next time you mess with the
plane. Yeah, and so, I mean, I think if they thought that was the issue, we would have seen a corrective notice go out across the system. And the Indians would have jumped all over that because it absolves their people of blame.
I think somewhere in here, I think there's a shred of agreement. I don't know what I expected to hear based on what you said last week. And by the way, it may not sound like it, but I take what you tell me as gospel.
I understand. And I appreciate that. And of course, this is an Occam's razor kind of thing, Chief, because we're never going to know what those pilots were.
Well, what did you
thinking?
Here, I'm not sure, based on what you said last week and what the report confirmed the next day, I'm not sure what I expected to hear from the conversation, but it sure as hell wasn't what I heard.
Yeah. Oh, from the cockpit voice recorder? Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, the first thing I
didn't do it. Did you do it? No. That's basically what they said, right?
The first thing I heard was, if this guy's suicidal, why is he not saying, yeah, I did it and we're going down?
Yeah, but don't even try and start him up, because I'll slug you if you do or something like that.
Well, so here's another theory that may or may not be correct. Both switches, the flight data recorder shows both switches in the run position, and in fact, at the crash, when the plane crashed, and in fact, the engines were, one of the engines had relit, and I think the other one was about to relight when and pushing, getting thrust
out. How many more seconds did they need? 10? 15?
Probably with that sink rate, they probably needed another, 1,000 feet of altitude and maybe another 5 seconds before they got enough thrust to stabilize the aircraft.
So almost.
So yeah, slow. So, excuse me, I'm going to be fighting this all morning.
No problem.
Is it possible that you have a logic circuit in the or a logic algorithm in the system that shut the switches off and then just was giving faulty readings the whole time. The switch never moved. The switches stayed in the on position. The algorithm cuts the engine fuel, kills the engines, and then resignals that the switches were moved back up again. Now, that's a hack. I would suggest that means somebody got in there and jiggered the algorithm to show that. But unless they have, and this is an issue that the pilots unions have been fighting for years, without a cockpit video recorder, and they should have that, I think, and the FAA has been arguing for this for years. Without a cockpit video recorder, we can't tell if there was physical movement.
What about the idea that they cut off so fast nobody could physically have moved both of them that fast?
I watched a pilot do that in a demo on YouTube.
Okay, and
the switches were right there. Yeah, well, it's 1001. It was a second. I mean, the CVR or the flight data recorder shows the switches being thrown in a second. So it's possible to do that.
With both hands or one?
You can do it with one hand, but it takes like three fingers.
All right.
So you pull up on the switch, kick it forward, or in this case, move it down because it's the cutoff position. So it's lift down. And it can be done, you need it done quickly, obviously.
If something else had cut the engines off, would you need to move the cutoff switches back and then forward again to start the sequence over again? Like a car, you basically got to turn the key to the off before you can start it again?
So here's the point. Excuse me, I was making earlier. Theoretically, because the switches are not moving anything mechanical. When you throw the switch, it's not linked to a little rod or a cable that runs the length of the aircraft to the engines and then pulls the engine switch. It's digital. You throw the switch, that tells the flight control computer turn off the fuel. If somebody had hacked into that system, or there was some bizarro world glitch in the software that generated a turn off, and it would have, here's how it has to go. It has to go, okay, the glitch goes, okay, we're airborne, we're at this altitude, turn off engine one, turn off engine two, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, turn on engine one, turn on engine two, and then crash. That's how the glitch would have to go. Because the switches would never move. The pilots would not touch the switches. The switches would always remain in the on position, but the algorithm now is controlling the flow of fuel to the aircraft. Now, that sounds, I can you program that? I don't know. But that's the only way in my mind that this thing happens as an accident. Because the switches were in the on position, but it's theoretically possible that the software could have sent a cut fuel signal to both engines and then a restart signal to both engines in that sequence without either pilot touching those switches.
So nobody really knows if the switches got moved because they.
That's why a cockpit video recorder would have been crucial here. And you know, the unions, the pilot unions, have fought video recording in the cockpit for decades. Because
if they put the flaps down from the black box, right? How would you not, why don't you know that the switches got moved?
Well, because the flaps were physically in that position on the wing when they recovered the aircraft.
So the black box doesn't record whether or not they were actually moved or not.
Well, the black box tells you they were moved, but the only evidence, the only one way to be 100, you know, it's a digital signal.
It's
like you have a switch, but your automatic system says, yeah, the switch has now been moved.
I assume at one point these things were mechanical.
I have no idea. I mean, we've been going fly-by-wire systems probably since the 70s.
Well, I'm going to say the 727s weren't, and 757s aren't, are they?
Oh, they're all fly-by-wire.
I don't think the first 737s were. I thought the Airbus was the first one who did that.
I don't know. In any event, all the aircraft that are flying now, I'm 100% certain are fly-by-wire. Or digital, and because they've changed all that out, it's the digital stuff is actually more reliable, but again, you know, this is a guy throwing a switch, or at least a electronic digital system recording a switch being thrown and then it being thrown again. It is theoretically possible the software records that without the switch being thrown.
If it's you and I sitting up there, and one of us was crazy enough to do this, I don't think that would be our conversation.
Well, and that's a great question. I mean, we don't know. And you know,
you got to be cold as ice to say I didn't do it. Who did it? Dog?
Maybe you're counting. You know, maybe you figure I'm not going to fight the co-pilot. I'm only going to fight with the co-pilot. I want the airplane to go down. I'm just going to say I didn't do it. Or you're thinking this will be really interesting when they recover our bodies in the black box and the CVR, and they can't figure out who's done it.
What happened? You mentioned that you thought there was a third guy up there, or was it?
There wasn't, apparently. Right. Tom, you know, I mean, if this guy's really smart, he's really thinking about it. He'll say I don't want a suicide on my family's name. It'll affect our insurance.
It might. Might not. Depends on how long you have the insurance.
Yeah, that's right.
It does, actually.
I don't know what Indian life insurance looks like. But you know, they're potentially the benefit that could be the benefits issue. You know, I don't want the fact that I'm a suicide guy, I don't want that to come out.
That's wild. Hey, where do you come down on this Epstein thing? Are you one of the weaklings that Trump doesn't need anymore as a supporter, or are you? Which side are you on?
I'm on the side that says, look, you know, why did you guys botch this thing? If you don't have the information, why did you allow this goofball conspiracy to develop after you got in office? If you didn't have names, if you didn't have a list that was going to satisfy these people, why say that you did? If you didn't intend to release it, why not say right out of the gate, we're not going to release it, rather than this jumbled hash of explanations? The best explanation I'm not so fired up over the list issue. I'm really not. As I am the way it was handled, which reflects badly on the people managing this, and it makes me wonder exactly what, because they have a collection of names that were supposedly involved with
Lou. They got a boatload of phone numbers. They're on wire, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean they've got his contact list, and I mean the best explanation I've heard for this is, There's all kinds of names on there, but there's no evidence. They're just names. And excuse me. And what's the point of releasing a bunch of names without context, with no evidence of misconduct that we're not going to prosecute, and just feeding the trolls on this? And so I think that's likely an explanation, but it doesn't explain the mishmash of, you know, why you guys gave different explanations out when you did. It's not a national security issue. It's a stupidity issue on the part of whoever was managing this.
Don't know about that, actually. Let's shift gears just a hair and say...
I mean, Tom, both sides have had access to this information now for some time. If I thought, or if they thought that this was embarrassing to Trump, or if it was embarrassing to Democrats, it would have been released in 3 seconds.
I just follow me here, because I'm a follow. Again, I went through this with Kevin yesterday. I don't envy Trump on this one. I honestly don't. I mean, I'm not going to go through it again, but I was on the board of the SIBO. We had these kind of moments, and it all comes down to, we got somebody we think might be guilty, but by the way, the somebody's pretty damn powerful, and what do we get from it? It's like, if you and I ran for as the co-presidents, and we said, look, we're going to get to the bottom of the Kennedy thing. All of a sudden, somebody drops a report on our desk, and the first thing you see is George Bush, Lyndon Johnson, and what was Dulles' first name, up to their ass in this mess.
Alan Foster Dulles.
Yeah, I mean, do we sit there and go, am I going forward or am I going backward if I do this? I mean, the Bushes are still alive. What Johnson, we probably don't care about because he's dead. I don't know if he has any kids around anywhere. Well, he's got the two, but nobody cares about them. I mean, where are we going with this? And I think the same thing happens with this. I mean, I look at this Wired, I don't know if I sent it, I think I sent it to you. We have the phone numbers of all the people who went from, that were stupid enough to use their damn phone on the boat trip between the island you could land a plane on and the other island. Right, so that's a problem. Okay, we seem to have anecdotal evidence.
Well, we know it was on the plane. We have the flight manifest for the airplane.
What I'm saying is, we have that issue. These people might be the captains of industry. They might be part of the royal family. They might be in a Senate. Who the hell knows? And I doubt very seriously it was Trump personally. I mean, because I think he was probably too smart to stay away from there. And now you've got all these issues of the Arab countries. And now, I don't think, I've never been there, you have. Even though everybody probably suspects that they're sleazebags, some of the guys over there, and aren't really the religious heads of the world like they let on to people that they are, to have it flat out that five close princes spent $5 million in a plane to go over and bang 14-year-olds, I think that's a problem. You can't just lob that one out there. But here's the one that I think is a big issue. Somewhere, and I've been trying yesterday and today, this guy Epstein got an awful lot of money awful fast. And what did the island cost him? $21 million or something? I mean, he had the place in Florida, he had the place in Manhattan. One of the things that I was listening to on YouTube, and again, this guy's not left or right. He just said, if the money comes out, that it's some combination of our CIA and the Mossad, which are the two most likely people, that essentially finance this guy with the idea of compromising people, I think that goes over like a fart in church, both here and in Israel. I really do. I mean, do we want our money going for that? If that's the truth? I mean, here's the problem. What I'm saying, Lou, and what all these other idiots are saying, is all rumor. But if you don't put the facts out there, the rumors fly, right?
Oh, I know. It may be that they've made a decision, they being the administration people, have made a decision saying, we're not going to feed this anymore. We're turning it off now. There'll be some fallout for a while, and for, you know, however, and then it'll go away. We have a pretty good indication that he was tied to some intelligence agencies here.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything about the Mossad, but the you know, we have the comment by Acosta, the prosecutor, that cut the deal with him back in, what was it, 2007, who apparently said under oath when he was interviewed that I was getting ready to throw the book at the guy, and I was told to back off that he was connected with the intelligence agencies, and so I backed off.
Well, then he had the guy that was in the same cell. I don't know how he's out somehow. Big interview yesterday. No way on earth could you kill yourself in that cell.
Well, I have very grave doubts that he killed himself.
Yeah,
and so to the extent that continues to be an issue, fine. But with, again, I don't know how that would be, you know, how that would be stage managed. My take is that if the guys that were controlling the jail were going to kill him, they wouldn't have ham-fisted this thing the way they did, which makes me think that it was somebody from outside the government. The way you kill somebody like that is you put something in his food.
Well, I get it. Yeah.
You know, so that he has like a heart attack or something. And then you get rid of the body quickly, like they did with that kid from Butler, the shooter in Butler.
Yeah.
So that there can't be any kind of autopsy or you know, cross check, or otherwise.
Is that kid dead?
Pardon me?
Is that kid dead?
The Butler shooter?
Yeah.
Yeah, they killed him, and then 10 days later they cremated him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Before there could be any kind of examination of his there could have been a detailed post-mortem
on a political side, though. You know, and I'll give him this: Trump is a pretty good reader of people, especially people who believe his stuff. I'm surprised I think he's off on this one by calling the members of his group that are worried about this as weak and he doesn't need them anymore. Let me finish real quick but I'm saying the same group of people, and by the way, I might be in this group, the same group of people who basically threw a bum out because his party thought it was okay for a guy to play volleyball with a girl and break some girl's nose. I'm not so sure the Democrats ever felt it was okay for somebody's nose to get broken. But the people who thought it was okay for that, well, the people who didn't think that was okay essentially threw a president out because of it, or threw a party out because of it. There's no way you would think those people think it's okay for some guy to drag a bunch of bigwigs into a place to bang 14-year-olds. Those people are not... You have to know your people better than that, I think.
So my take on that Truth Social or whatever the place was where you put that message out was that this was the petulant, you know, seventh grade Trump talking.
What?
He wants this to go away.
This is a generic question to my conservative guests that I love. Why can't we ever just let the guys, why is it your job to back off with somebody? You don't do it with me. You don't do it with anybody else. Why do we always have to? I mean, Professor Hal is spending half his time trying to disprove the tariff number from Trump. It's his number. I happen to agree he might be wrong too, but why is it everybody else's job to say you're really not, the prices really aren't going up when they are? I mean, he said what he said. If I walked up tomorrow and said, yeah, Lou's an idiot, which I would never say, by the way, you wouldn't have 15 people sitting there go, oh man, he was just in a bad mood, that's not what he meant. Why do we do it for him?
I'm not saying that for him. I'm saying that this is the seventh grade Trump. He absolutely believes this. He's mad. He's irritated that this is a distraction on his presidency. And of course, this is I think his Achilles heel. He's had a pretty good run here through the last few weeks, and all of a sudden this thing surfaces and it's distracting people from acknowledging what an effective president he is, and he that makes him mad, Tom. And I'm not defending this. He should not have put something like that out there. I think it reflects his petulance and you know, old man irritation, and I it's a mistake. I don't know why he did it, except it. You know, he's saying this is distracting from what I've got, the accomplishments that we've got. I'm not firing my attorney general. She's killing it, and her people are killing it in federal court. Now, again, admittedly,
what have you in threatening judges and getting stuff your way? Do you agree with any of these decisions?
I don't agree with any of the court decisions that are being handed down, or almost none of them that are being handed down by the lower court. And I think he's absolutely right to go to point out that the judges that are involved in these things are off the rails. And I'm irritated with Roberts and the Supreme Court people for allowing this to continue.
Would you vote for the Enabling Act tomorrow?
Refresh my mind.
It's the one that Reichstag gave all the power to the dictator.
Oh, why would I do that?
Because that's what people seem to want to have happen. They want this guy to have all the power in the world.
No,
I don't want them to take over the world. I want the Supreme Court to do its job.
Well, if they did their job, there has been Republican courts that said a president, once stuff has been approved and signed and things like that, you can't fire all the people. You can't knock the amount of people down to where the intent of Congress and the signed law is at a point where you can't do it. And that's what he's doing.
That's one judge's interpretation of what he's doing.
Okay, so if you have
this is the problem, and this is why I would hope that the House would begin impeachment proceedings against a number of these judges. This is the problem, Tom. The judges are coming in there and saying, well, it looks to me like what's going on is this, and I don't like this. And that's the wrong analysis. The analysis is, does the statute passed by Congress give him the authority to do this? And if it does, then I'm getting out of the way. Is there a statute that prevents me from taking jurisdiction on these immigration cases? If it does, then I'm out of here. I'm not supposed
talking
to be
about
messing around here.
Stuff like education department.
Well, there's nothing in this, as I understand the statute. This is why the Supreme Court ruled the way it did.
Supreme Court ruled the way it did because they're totally intimidated. But
trust me, they're not intimidated.
Here's the backlash on this, and this was a Republican retired judge I was reading about. He goes, here's the problem: if somebody's in office and people pass, you know, thing for a roadway, and we apportionment the money for the roadway, and the guy signs it, now it's a law, the money's going out, people are spending it, and the new guy comes in and he says, well, even though it's a law or whatever, I'm just firing all the people in the construction department without changing the law, without having it run through Congress, but now effectively I've blunted the whole thing because there's nobody there left to do it. The guy says that's absolutely illegal. And yet that's what he's doing.
It just reinforces in my mind that the Trump superpower causes people to reveal their foolishness.
You think that you can do that? I don't have the chops. I don't have the bill to do when you take a bill out, not revoke, but repeal. I'm not going to repeal the bill. I'm just going to fire everybody in charge of doing it.
Do I have control over the federal workforce? The answer is yes. Congress explicitly, you know, Congress could pass a statute saying don't do this.
But this Congress is not going to do anything like that.
Well, I mean, again, the question is not whether, you know, you look at the intent behind there. If the statute allows this kind of control of these, you know, this agency, if Congress has appropriated the funds for the operation of the agency up to a point, then you can step in and remove. You can't step in and remove people willy-nilly.
But he's doing it.
If those jobs, he's not doing it willy-nilly. He's doing it in accordance with the federal employment statutes.
Okay.
The civil right, or I've dumped the name of it now, the Civil Reform Act that Carter passed that put up the federal executive workforce rules. They're doing it in accordance with that. And so this is a lot of these fights.
Is the man ever met a law that he thinks applies to him?
As far as I can tell, they've been scrupulous in following the law.
We think it's okay that if the guy before me puts in a consumer protection group, which by the way I didn't agree with, and there's people working there and they're doing whatever it is they're doing, I happen to think that that's somewhat duplicative of what other people were supposed to be doing. That's why I didn't like him there in the first place. I would never dream, if I was the new president, that I should go back to Congress and I should say, look, this is a duplicative agency. It's supposed to be done by the Comptroller of the Currency. It's supposed to be done by these other guys, blah, blah, blah. We don't need, let's find a way to drag this agency down, sprinkle these people if we don't think the other people are doing their job in the areas where they're supposed to have been done, and let's lower the workforce. I don't think I have the power to walk in and say, I can't stop what these guys are doing. I can't stop the funding. By the way, tomorrow morning there's not going to be anybody in that building. So there's nobody here to do anything you wanted them to do. They're just gone. Well, that's sort of the same as repealing the bill without doing it, right?
Okay, so first of all, let's go back to the analysis. It's not a question of whether I'm gonna go to Congress. That's one way of getting rid of the agency. Another way of getting rid of the agency is to challenge the agency's founding principles, which he did, and I believe they lost on that. But okay, to come in and say this agency has been constituted in an unconstitutional way, and the restrictions on executive power that are laid in here are inconsistent with the requirements of the Constitution, and so I'm going to force that issue into the courts by firing a bunch of these people and suspending the operation of the agency, and then we'll get a lawsuit, and then the court will sort it out.
His court.
Well, it's not his court.
Okay.
It's not anybody's court. I will say this. And if you look at the decisions over the last couple of terms, the only group that's voting in lockstep are the progressives. And they're not even voting in lockstep 100% of the time, but almost.
Let me turn it around. Let's go on to something else. But if you were somebody who wanted all power, how would you do it any differently than he's doing it?
I'd co-opt the military.
What makes you think that's not happening?
I don't think it's happening.
Yet. Maybe that he's only been there 4 months.
Well, okay. So either it's one or the other. You know, he's not taking steps, you know, in areas where there's 100 areas where he's not taking steps, and in those areas it's just a matter of time. But every other thing he does to properly exercise executive branch power that has been granted to him by statute, when he does this, it gets everybody all upset. Did you have the same reaction? I know you didn't. Did you have the same reaction when Joe Biden tried to force an illegal vaccine
Absolutely,
on everybody in the country?
Absolutely.
Did you say he's trying to take over the country?
That's a little different.
Well, I mean,
There was a disease out there.
Yeah, but that's much more personally intrusive than what Trump has ordered.
Let's not forget that with that particular disease, and by the way, I did not agree with the way it was going down. We did that every day in the show. We talked about how we didn't agree with it. That particular disease.
But did you think he was trying to take over the country?
No.
Okay.
This is. Anybody. I think everybody has to look and see what's going down here. And it's an absolute power grab, in my opinion. And I hope it'll be safe. It could be, you know, the constitutional crisis that we needed, Lou. And all of a sudden, we find out that the Congress does work and there are channels in place. I hope that's what's happening. I hope that's what happens.
That is what's happening.
Boy, oh boy, I don't see it.
The courts, he is being challenged at every step of the way by a legal process. When he loses, when the administration loses at the district court level, and they lose lots of times, this is another, by the way, that leads me to another issue about recusal, but we'll talk about that in a minute. When he loses at those district courts, the government follows the law that the district courts have directed. They don't run off and do their own thing. He's not pulling an Andrew Jackson saying, you know, you've got your opinions, let's see you try to enforce them.
In my mind, he's doing that exactly. But that's not, you know.
But he's not. If they were, you'd see an entirely different kind of discussion going on. That would be a constitutional crisis. They are not doing that. They are following the rules of these courts. They're taking up the appeals, and in the cases of the emergency appeals, they're 15-for-15 at the Supreme Court on emergency appeals. That's pretty good. Now they have lost some stuff at the Supreme Court. And they're not getting everything they asked for, but you know, they're part of the reason you're seeing these reversals is because these judges that are making the decisions at the lower level are not our best. And again,
anybody who doesn't agree with them is not our best. I get that.
Nope. Let me give you an example. It came out earlier in the week that some 200 federal district judges had signed a letter to Roberts saying, we have real concerns about abuse of power by this administration. This is unprecedented, but it's because these guys are progressives that they think that this is an okay thing to do.
You think it's okay for 10 ice cars to pull into the lot?
Every one of those judges should have recused themselves from hearing any of the cases coming in before the court because they had prejudged them.
But the people who prejudge on his side, that's okay.
No. If one of their judges...
You don't think that Clarence Thomas should recuse himself? What do we need him for? I can tell you how he's going to vote on every issue.
I'm pretty sure you can't. I don't know about that. I don't have any evidence that Clarence Thomas has prejudged a particular case, but certainly these judges had. Every one of those guys should be impeached for not recusing themselves on these cases. I guarantee you that letter was leaked to the
people
progressive
here,
law firms around the country who now said, okay, now we know which judges we want to take this and these cases in front of.
So the people here that had the the Puerto Rican historical thing once a year on the west side, 4 days before they were going to have it, 3 or 4 ice cars compounded it a lot and just kind of sat there. Intimidated the hell everybody and they canceled the whole thing. You think that's okay?
What does that have to do with judges recusing themselves?
They're saying that it looks to me like people are abusing power. That's what the letter says. It looks to me like people are abusing power. Does that mean I should recuse myself when the other guy... Why don't we just... All the people who feel that way on the Democratic side, every judge that was appointed by a Democrat just quit. Would that solve all the problem?
The letter said, as I understand it, the letter said we are concerned about this particular administration. And that indicates a level of bias that normally would require recusal.
Do you know of any other administration where people have handcuffed and slammed down senators and so forth?
If the senators are breaking the law and they don't know they're a senator, yes. Why would I be surprised at that?
All right. If
a law enforcement official interfere or a congressman or congresswoman interferes with a police officer in the performance of their duties, then I would expect them to be handcuffed and tossed in the back of the car.
Performance of their duty. Well, all this stuff is kind of open to interpretation. But hey, let's talk a hair about.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the senator that tried to bum rush the podium. In an event involving, it was DHS, right? The gnome, Christy Gnome.
I saw the video.
That guy was not identified as a senator. He wasn't wearing anything that identified himself as a senator. He yelled out something after they grabbed him because he was moving forward yelling at her.
Actually, the film that I saw, he identified himself right when he came in the room.
Well, he didn't say, I don't care. Even if he did say that, that's not enough. If you don't stop and not move toward the podium, if you're moving toward the podium, I don't care what you're saying. You know, you're saying, I'm the second coming. You're going to get grabbed and you're going to get bummed. You're going to get rushed out of there. He's lucky that's all that happened to him.
Okay. I mean, the zillions of people now that have been hired in this Homeland Securities and these ICE agents. Where are we getting them from, Lou? What kind of training do they have?
I have no idea. I assume their certification training. They have to go through.
In like 3 months?
I don't know, Tom. I just don't.
They're all wearing masks. You okay with that?
Yes, I am.
Why?
Because the Democratic Party is calling for violence against the agents.
Okay then. What did you make of?
By the way, the blame for all of this, Tom, falls.
Don't tell me Hillary.
No, it falls on the Biden administration.
Okay.
This was a concerted effort to make it impossible to remove, as I said last week or a couple of weeks ago, to make it impossible to remove these folks without this kind of an approach, and that's what they wanted. They designed it this way. This is on them.
This has evolved a little bit, like a lot, a little bit. Why does anybody agree with this 19 or 20 million enemies we have in the country? Why does anybody?
They're not enemies. They're criminals.
They're criminals. Now, every one of them is a criminal. So it went from people may be agreeing, like maybe even me, that somebody somehow swam across the river with a bunch of cocaine in his backpack. Do I want to get him the hell out of here? Yes, I do. But somehow it evolved from, we have a Hispanic community here who mysteriously threw their support behind Trump because he was able to get them to believe that the new people were on their way to citizenship faster than they were because they were logged in the system and blah, blah, blah. Now, people believe that, whether they should have or whether they shouldn't have. But now it seems like it's being turned on them, that the person who's been here for 15 years is now a criminal.
Let me object to your insult of the Hispanic community. He was able to get them to believe, as opposed to they listened and believe, because they reached that as a result of their own thought process.
Maybe.
Your comment is a gratuitous insult to these people by indicating they somehow don't have agency, or they can't think for themselves. So let me object to
that. A lot of people believe 19 million people are. They're not.
We don't know what the number is.
That's right.
That number's
we don't
as
know.
Good as anybody else's
number. Actually not, but
again, by design.
By whose design?
By design of the Democratic Party that said we're going to have an open border.
You know, one of the things that Biden did, right or wrong, I don't know, when in his last like 2.5 years, when they tried to stop the carnage on the border, at least slow it down, maybe politically, whatever. When you look at the numbers of the people, and I couldn't believe when I read this law, when I look at the numbers of the people coming across, the people that were stopped, they ended up having a new policy where if you stop some guy running across the river, I don't know if you can run across the Rio Grande or what do you got to do, but they had the ability to just say, hey, get the bleep back on the other side. There's no home for you here. That was called an interdiction, and it was considered somebody coming across the border, but you sent the guy back. And if he came through the next 10 days, and this is foolishly on Biden's administration's part, you never even took the guy's name down. You considered it 10 interdictions. So the people you're counting on that came across the border are, in most cases, are the people you sent back. Nobody has any idea of the person who got through because he got through. I mean, yeah. You look at the numbers, they're insane that anybody would, yet you're actually counting the people you caught and sent back and not the people who actually got through.
Yep.
You couldn't write fiction like this, Lou.
This was, again, a concerted effort by whoever was running the country, and I'm not necessarily going to blame it on Mr. Biden, a concerted policy of saying, we're going to let these folks in. You guys down at the border, do whatever idiotic paperwork you got to do, but we're not sending anybody back. We're not closing the border. This could have been done. The border could have been closed with no further congressional action had there been a willingness
to
do
it. Well, that's the point. It was closed. I'm not saying in the first part of his term. In the second part, it was closed, and they just were sending people back. And those are the people they were counting as coming over, and they were going back.
Well, they didn't close it a year ago. If you look at the numbers, you know, 24, 38, 40,000 a month versus
that's what
what's
I'm saying.
Coming across
they're counting the people that came over and got caught.
Well, I mean, I can't. We don't have any idea whether those numbers are right. We only have the numbers where they were processing people across the border.
We have included in there are numbers that they sent people back, which could have been the same person.
Could well be, and that's on that administration for the way they were.
Well, it's on this administration to pick this $19 million people. Enemies that are here, and by
where
the way,
where do you suppose that number comes from?
I think this administration gets it out of thin air.
No, there were estimates, as I said before, there were estimates back in the aughts when I talked to somebody about this, that we had somewhere between 10 and 13 million people in the country illegally.
They're counting now the Polish leading lady who's been here for 40 years.
I don't know about that. They were counting. That was a number, you know, 10 to 13 million. What was that based on? That was based on things like welfare rolls. It was based on things like head counts versus voter counts, head counts versus other issues, but it was an amalgam, and it was an estimate because we just didn't have a good number. So we know that millions of people came across the border during the course of the Biden administration. Okay, millions.
We don't know how many stayed.
We weren't thrown back. We know that millions came through, and we can estimate. You know, we say, okay, how reliable is that number? It's good within, 70%. Okay, so now we've got a range. So the numbers, I don't believe any fixed number that's say less than 15 million and north of 21 or 22 million. I would say that's the range, but I would not take a specific number. And so there you are. I mean, that's what you're going to deal with. And like I said, the removal process has been designed or been basically set up so that you're going to have the issues that we're seeing on these individual cases.
Okay, we have
for every 200, 1,000, 2,000 people, we round up and move out. We're going to have 1, 2, 3 people who have been here for a while, who've established a life. Is it perfect? No, but the people that allowed this mass movement to come forward here knew that.
All right, okay.
They knew this was going to be an issue.
They were
counting on it to have an administration, follow an administration, look at the problem, throw its hands up and say, well, there's nothing we can do. We just have to naturalize everybody.
All right, here's the numbers now. We don't want to go into these. 335 million people live in this country. Of that, 14.3% were foreign-born. So that means 47 million people, 280 million people are citizens by birth, or at least they thought they were. U.S.-born population, the remaining percentage of the total population, which includes both native-born and naturalized citizens. Naturalized citizens, 24.5 million are naturalized. Okay, so that leaves 23 million people that are here that are not either born here or naturalized citizens, which is students. It's all kinds of people in there, and people's wives that haven't made it through the citizenry process yet. It's the cleaning lady that left on the green card 30 years ago and has been paying Social Security for 30 years. It's all of those people. There's not enough room for 19 million people to have swum over last year.
But we don't know. You just told me we don't know we don't know if those numbers are correct. You say there's 14%.
I'm reading the numbers from the top down. From the bottom up.
We don't know if that 14% number is correct, right? Because we don't know how many people are here.
We have a pretty good idea what the population
illegally,
is.
We don't know. I mean, this is you just said I reject that number because we don't know the status. Okay, fine, great. We don't know how many people.
All I did was read off the numbers that apparently we do know.
I'm sorry. What's the source? U.S. Census.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm great. That's a useful approximation, but we don't know the number because we don't know how many people are here illegally.
We know how many people are here legally. We know how many people are here. If you do the math, that leaves you with the bottom number.
But we don't know the status of a bunch of the people that are supposedly here legally or illegally. We don't have a good figure for it.
The census
data is an approximation, but it's not. I don't consider it to be exact.
Simple question. I don't know if you know the answer. Why is it that there have been people here for like a real long time that are like married and have kids and all kinds of stuff? Why is it such a problem for them to become citizens? Why is it like years? What is the hang up?
I don't know. That's going to be a topic for another time. Before we go, I want to raise one issue. Remember I told you that the guys running Syria were ISIS, except that they were allowed to play soccer?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we got on this other topic. Why is Israel blasting those guys?
Because the Israelis, when Syria fell apart, the Israelis established a protective buffer zone for those Druze people.
Who are those guys, Lou?
They're a religious offshoot from.
But they don't bother. They don't bother anybody.
They don't bother anybody, really. No, they're a religious offshoot. But that's what makes them so dangerous. They're considered apostates by the Islamic fundamentalists.
An offshoot of Muslim, not
Islam. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if I remember right, they're an offshoot of Shia Islam, a small religious sect.
Okay.
They are very pro-Jew. They like the Jews.
Right. So the area they're hanging in, the place they live in Syria.
Right. That was a buffer zone established by Israel.
Okay. Now, you know, I'm going to ask this question. Economically, is that place somewhat self-sufficient? Can they grow stuff there? I mean, is it an area that where if you just left them alone, they'd be okay or not?
My understanding is they are self-sufficient, and that's an area where they could establish their own enclave.
And there's water, there's a fertile field, there's olive trees,
yeah,
whatever the hell you need.
They're not going anywhere.
Okay, fair enough.
And they're there under, and this has been true from the day Syria collapsed. They are there under the explicit protection of Israel.
Okay.
And the Israelis made it very clear to that government, but they are considered apostates by the Muslim fundamentalists, and the penalty for apostasy under Islam is death.
Why, with all the other problems that guy has, why can't he leave those people alone and just take advantage of the fact that they're not bugging him?
I'm not sure that this was something that was directed by him, by the leadership. I think this is some kind of rogue mob thing that was going on or that went on under his supervision. I mean, his people weren't going to stop it because they view these people as apostates. But
what's your latest?
They may stop it now.
What's your latest scorecard? And I'll use the term how well he's doing in terms of A, taking power, and B, didn't we talk to him, or Trump talk to him, or somebody talked to him?
Oh yeah, we lifted the sanctions on him.
And what's again? This is. The news just stops in all these places, and it becomes a topic. You and I talk about it. We learn from you about it. And then if we don't listen, we don't talk to you again. I haven't heard a headline other than their blasting the other day, and that lasted about 2 seconds headline.
So again, this goes back to my comment about if you want to stay out of trouble, don't mess with the Jews in the Middle East. They put the Israelis established this enclave because the Jewish population there said they're going to this is ISIS. With soccer players, they're going to come for us. The Israelis said, "Fine, set this up." There is absolutely no question that if these guys had unfettered access to this region, they would massacre every man, woman, and child in there.
They blew out of the religion.
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's harsh.
Tom, remember
a long talk we had
a while back about. Not everything being economically motivated.
Yeah. Well,
this makes no except in that context.
Except for the fact, if they do have an economic system that is working in Syria, everybody else can be looking at it. Nobody else is doing anything over there, are they?
Well, I mean, Syria's rebuilding. And so why you would do this, I don't know. I mean, it could be, let me strike that. There could be another reason. The other reason could be the fact that the Syrian government says, this is our territory, we're going to take it back and assert control over it. But the way you do that is not by sending an armed mob in there to murder people, which is what they're doing.
Well, let me ask you. These are questions I think that the listener, not just me. Are they so separate? I mean, are they okay if they had a Syrian government to say, okay, we need an army to protect us. We need roads. We need water. Are they not willing to be part of Syria? Or it sounds to me like maybe they are, and these guys just don't want them.
They coexisted under Assad peacefully for many years. That's my answer. I think they just want to be left alone.
And the territory is, God, the borders over there are so. Was it always Syria their spot?
Yes. Yeah, I mean Israel's cry. If you want to make an issue out of that, Israel's crossing an international border to attack Syrian forces.
I'm saying they always were part of, when they started out, they were in the same spot. They didn't come from some other place.
I think some of them migrated to that area once the Assad government fell
and
from
they
other
are,
parts of Syria.
So which part of the Muslim group doesn't like them, or do neither one of them like them?
The Shia fundamentalists. I can't keep track. I think the guys that are running Syria now are Sunnis, a particularly virulent
they're like
Sunni
Saudi,
Muslim.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And these guys are Shia.
Would the risk of of insulting my any Muslim listeners, other than the fact they don't like each other, is there any difference between the Sunni and the Shia?
There's certain religious practices that are different.
I mean, are they seriously different?
Well, they pay fealty to different brothers or different sons of Muhammad, I think. And I could be screwing that up, Tom.
But it's not, I mean, from the outside looking in, it looks like somewhat of a fraternal fight. It's not...
Oh, it's intra... Yeah, it's internecine.
Yeah, it's not...
Warfare. It's not... This isn't the Protestants and the Catholics in Northern Ireland. Well, it sort of is the Protestants and the Catholics in Northern Ireland. Strike that. Yeah, it is. It is very much like that.
If that was Irish versus Irish, the religion just happened to be the reason.
Yeah, these people are Syrians versus Syrians. It's a religious,
so
it's a religious
fight. So your grade of this guy so far is not that he's a good guy, he's doing what you thought he was going to do in the first place.
I thought this was going to come bubbling out, yep.
But the rest of the place, is he making any progress?
I mean, Syria's moderately stable. They let us fly over there to... attack, you know. Attack,
well, aren't
Iran.
The guys from the guys who were attacking Israel? They're in Lebanon. They're not in Syria.
There are sects in Syria that were attacking Israel as well.
Jesus, well, you really do need a score guy. You know, I find myself doing, which I've never done before. A lot of times, after we get off the show, you may think all I do is argue with you, but that's not the truth. I review everything you said. I look at the map. And I go, this is what Lou's talking about here, this is what he's talking about here, this is what he's talking about here.
It's what you're seeing is a reversion, I think, to the natural tribalism that was there before the, you know, Balfour Declaration began imposing, was it Sykes-Picot or whatever it was, the treaty after the end of World War I that drew the boundaries when the Ottoman Empire fell.
Well, I was
apart.
Just listening to a almost like an hour-long YouTube thing on the history of that, where I got pictures of the T.E. Lawrence and all those guys that were down there and deciding who's going what where, and the Arabs were this kind of a group, and then they were a Bedouin group, and then they decided they needed some power when they didn't have any, and then the British gave them some, and the British were on one side and the French were on the other. It was all basically a chop-up of the Ottoman Empire, wasn't it?
Exactly.
You know, next week let's kind of walk through that a little bit, because it's they're the same problems there today, right? It's like it's 1918 all over again.
Very, very, very much so.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. Everything good?
Take care.
SP Futures down 1, Nasdaq up 23. Do we have our guys, Jimmy?
Yes, we do.
All right. Wayne? Andrew?
I am
how are
here.
You, how are you guys?
Surviving the heat.
We've actually got a break today. It's only supposed to be like 75, but what... this week we've been maybe talking more than we should have about the not just the Epstein thing, but it's you know, like I said, there's been times when I've been involved in a little bit of stuff like this, where how far do you want to go with one of these things? And I honestly, even though I'm no fan, as everybody knows, I feel for Trump on this one, because he when he said he wanted to blow all this stuff out there, he probably didn't get the report that he got. He probably didn't think he was going to get the report he got. Now he's sitting there going, what do I do with this bomb?
Well, Tom, you actually are talking to two guys who were investigating the Epstein-Trump link back in 2018, where no
and
one
before,
else...
And before.
It took us... our investigation took us to the city of Waterbury, Connecticut, where that opened up a lot of doors into other issues, including Epstein's trafficking. In one case of a young girl who was 11 years old when she was kidnapped off the street in Waterbury and basically transferred, sold into Epstein's trafficking ring. And this was one of the two girls. This was a 12-year-old girl who was later identified as one of two girls who were raped together.
I was not aware that any of these girls, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was not aware that any of the girls came from here. They came from here?
The 12-year-old was from Connecticut, and the 13-year-old was a teen who want a 13-year-old who wanted to get into modeling in New York. what Trump and Epstein were doing, they were using their modeling agencies and modeling agencies of other business people in New York to basically traffic these girls.
And well, and here's a little context, Tom. I was listening to the earlier part of the show today, and I thought, what a great proxy, what a kind of civic proxy for every man that you're doing here, which is you're concerned, and rightfully so, but there's a benefit of the doubt that an important guy like Trump, you know, he maybe this is all unfair to him, and I think this is probably the first time we've gotten into this on your show, partly because the larger context is people don't want to think about this stuff, except there's certain people in the let's say blogging community and elsewhere who very much want to get into it, and now we're seeing the larger confrontation of people basically saying this can't be that bad, and other people kind of saying, well, maybe it is. So that's my kind of interjection here. But Wayne and I found ourselves just almost as a byproduct of our other investigations years ago being drawn into this and meeting and talking with people who are in many ways the leaders of trying to bring this Epstein and Trump and other connections to the surface.
Well, what, so, I mean, let's kind of break it up. When I say I feel for Trump on this one, because I think, I mean, I was on a board, but I was never the guy who made the call. But we were, whenever, I don't know, if I were to use the example, if I was in charge of something like this, and I really do think it's very important that we know who killed a very popular president. I think that the country needs to know these kinds of things. Now, you know, when I'm dead and everybody else who's around in 1963 is dead, maybe they won't feel the same way, but I think it's important. But yet, if I'm sitting in the Oval Office and they drop a, you guys drop a piece of paper on my desk and the name on top is George Bush, and I go, holy crap, the guy's got his family still alive. I mean, there's millions of friends. I mean, there's, if I'm not absolutely sure, I got to be real careful lobbing this one out. Johnson, I don't think anybody gives a crap about because he's dead. And I mean, Lady Bird's or Linda Baines is someplace. Nobody even knows where they are. I don't know if that's as big of a bomb. A former dead CIA chief being involved in something 70 years ago, I guess, you know, or 60 years ago, I guess, you know, that fart could go on in church without everybody leaving. I mean, it becomes an issue. And I was listening to YouTube, this thing, and the guy was talking about it's not the names. Because, I mean, I sent you guys a thing from Wired, and they got all the phone numbers and all that stuff. You can't really prove what those guys did when they got there. You have an inkling that that's why they went there. And I really don't think there's ever been any evidence that says Trump was on the island with a 14-year-old. I know he and this guy have to go back a ways, but I don't know that there's ever been any accusation of that, and I would not want to.
Well, why would he need to be when he's got his own mansion and his own beauty contest?
Well, I get that part, but I'm saying these issues, and the one this guy brought up is Epstein. I don't know if you guys touched on this when you were doing your research. He seemed to have gotten a lot of money real quick. And
oh yeah,
well, this dude and this, I should know the guy's name when I'm talking about him. His point was he thinks they got funded by a couple of governments, and his rumored suspicion, again, when you don't come out with the facts, the rumors fly, right? His suspicion is it was the Israelis in an attempt to compromise a lot of people from the Middle East and the CIA's attempt to compromise a lot of people here. And his opinion, which is all it is that a lot of the dough was funded by those two governments. Now, If I'm Trump and I see that land on my desk, I go, where do I go with this one?
Well, and we got to look at the first administration of Trump. So the U.S. attorney that was responsible for the sweetheart deal when they found Epstein guilty, he was under investigation by the state of Florida, this back in 2006, state of Florida, and the federal government.
So that was before Trump.
Yeah, this was back under George W. Bush. And so the deal that was made, he got this a non-prosecution agreement from the federal government that if you plead guilty to this basically charge of soliciting prostitution from an underage girl, we won't prosecute you or anyone else in your circle. That deal was arranged by the U.S. attorney in Miami, Alex Acosta. Now, it was Acosta who later said, don't touch this Epstein thing because he's intelligence. Acosta never said what intelligence agency. People assume, well, it could be Israel, it could be the United States, or as you say, could be both. But what does Trump do in the first administration? He appoints Alex Acosta, the guy that was responsible for the sweetheart deal with Epstein. He appoints him to be the labor secretary.
Would the record reflect that Acosta really wanted no part of that deal? He was told to do that by somebody.
It's clear.
Yeah, and let me interject here. Wayne was in Washington when this happened, and I happened to be, well, I didn't happen, but I was with Wayne. And Wayne immediately does a three-part series about Acosta, the sweetheart deal, as soon as the nomination occurred. I think it was maybe February. And Wayne, within 2 days, had started publishing on his website a three-part daily investigation of this whole thing, laying it out. And here's the last part, or at least the last interim part. It happened that I knew a staff member for a Florida congresswoman, a Democrat. Her name is Frederica Wilson, and she was on the Education and Workforce House Committee. And so she's from Florida, and she would have, as a Democrat, had a certain perspective and ability to raise hell about this. And I kept asking that staffer, are you going to do anything about this Acosta thing? And they were oblivious, couldn't care less. And I don't know whether it was, I don't think there was some big intrigue. It's just,
something went wrong. Please try again.
I don't know if I'm still there, but
yeah, you're.
They didn't want to do anything. And I'm thinking, why? Here's Wayne Manson instantly gets the picture that we're still talking about, 7-8 years later. And nobody, the elected people in the House and Senate that are supposed to be doing this stuff, are maybe asking one or two perfunctory questions that the nominee, Acosta, doesn't want to answer. And so what we need is an informed electorate that puts pressure on these people to protect the public interest.
Andrew, you can't, I mean, boy, oh boy. One thing that's interesting about being a host of a show like this, as I end up arguing with people I agree with just to get more information on them. how weird does that sound? Would you have a, if you were the rep sitting in front of interviewing this guy, and you have some, they probably don't even know how much Washington works as much as you guys do, and that's why I love listening to you. Do you think if you were to say, okay, let's take it for instance that you're not a loser, you know this guy's a sleazebag, and somehow you went along with this deal. If you were to say in front of all these cameras, By the way, who told you to do that? First of all, I can't imagine anybody asking that question, and I can't imagine him answering it. Or am I right or wrong?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He would not answer. He'd give the same answer a lot of these Trump nominees are giving now. Basically waffle.
But, I mean, would you expect him? Whoever the person was clearly has a lot of power from someplace and clearly doesn't want to be known. I mean, how much, I guess my question is, how much is Acosta the perpetrator or the victim here?
Oh, he's a middleman.
Yeah.
He was told what to do. And here's one other thing, going back to the roots here, the sax part of the name of the show. This was not Acosta's first rodeo. And so part of what Wayne was writing about, and I've looked into extensively also, was that when Acosta was Attorney General, falling into, not Attorney General, but U.S. Attorney, a federal prosecutor there in Florida, one of the biggest Swiss banking scandals in world history fell into his lap. And here's what it was, briefly. A American-born banker named Brad Birkenfeld from Boston went to work for UBS in Switzerland, the main United Bank of Switzerland, as your listeners would know. And he thought, gee, the company is setting it up, us mid-level bankers, to for us to be prosecuted if we help clients hide their assets and commit tax fraud. So Birkenfeld came to Washington and wanted to deliver a list of 19,000 customers to the Justice Department who he thought were probably hiding their assets through UBS and bilking their spouses, partners, and of course the government. And what happened was Birkenfeld, who I've gotten to know somewhat through the years, he tried to hire the best law firms to represent him. They all said they're conflicted out. He hired a small law firm. They went into the Justice Department, and it turns out that only Birkenfeld is prosecuted.
Wow.
And he goes to prison. And guess who the prosecutor was down in Florida? Acosta. And the reason, and Birkenfeld later got out and wrote a memoir and had an announcement at the press club, and we all went over to the Trump Hotel afterwards, maybe 10 of us, and I've gotten to know him. But the reason was, in his memoir, he says they were scared of how powerful these 19,000 people were. And so what's the reaction? Put Birkenfeld in prison and not prosecute the 19,000 others.
Well, what was the actual cause for Epstein to get in this allegedly suicide-proof room? What was his? What did they finally get him for?
Oh, they got him for trafficking when he was coming back from Paris in his private jet. It landed over in New Jersey, and the feds were there and took him in. Now this was under Trump's first administration, and he got put in the Metropolitan Detention Center in Manhattan. He was awaiting trial.
Well, so did he ditch the country on the first plead guilty thing?
Well, when he pled guilty where he actually was allowed to leave the stockade, they call it, the county prison in Palm Beach County, Florida. He only had to check in at night. He had to stay there at night. He was allowed to go to his mansion in Palm Beach during the day.
And he had a whole wing of the prison.
He had his own wing.
He was allowed to bring in girls or young women for companionship. What the hell is this?
Good Lord.
Yeah. And by the way, his defense attorneys who worked out this deal for him were people like Alan Dershowitz And another name from the past, Ken Starr.
Wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, right.
Right. So he's in this thing for his plea guilty, and then did he leave or did he? But there's a lot of people here that do. If it's drunk driving or something, you stay in jail for the weekends and you go to work during the week. I mean, that happens a lot here.
But you
don't get women in the place, I don't think.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. But at the same time, his trafficking ring is going just fine.
Well, does anybody? did you guys ever come across where he got the $21 million for? It wasn't the island $21 million. I mean, where did he get that?
Well, before we get to that, because that's a long and still unknown story, and actually. You said $21 million. You're talking about Epstein?
I was talking about that particular island. I thought I hit that number. It was $21 million somewhere in my.
No, we think he was much richer than that.
Oh, I'm sure he was. I'm talking about that. That's one of the numbers.
I would just. Are you talking about how he purchased the island?
Well, I'm just saying that was one number. I mean, there's many more. There's a place in Florida.
One of the things is the Epstein Island. I think it's actually called Little St. James Island. It lies off of St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Epstein had actually basically bought the government of the U.S. Virgin Islands, the territorial government. They were all under his wing. So people said, how could all this go on when you have the U.S. Virgin Islands has their own attorney general? Their own law enforcement. Well, he had bought them all off, and that's why he was able to continue as usual. Nobody landed on Little St. James Island. It's too small for an airport. I think it had a helipad, but they'd land in St. Thomas,
I got a real stupid question. As a guy from Chicago, where you turn on the faucet, if I'm crazy enough or stealthy enough to buy one of these islands, where do I get? Do all of them have their own water? Do you get your own sewage system? What do you do with the place once you get it?
Yeah, apparently he had everything came in. They had water coming in. They even had Wi-Fi. Now you wonder what a bunch of perverts are doing with the free Wi-Fi on the island. But anyway,
this was just one of his mansions. His place on the Upper East Side of New York was considered.
It was
New York City.
It was built originally by the owners of Macy's.
Really?
And they died. The husband and wife, I think their name was Schiff, they died on the Titanic.
Wow.
Well, can we go back to this prison time just
before? Yeah. It was
that one of the. One of the ways that people who stumble on this years ago, like Wayne and me and some others, one of the kind of Rosetta Stones is a list on the internet with all the names blocked out by an investigating police officer from that Palm Beach area.
Palm Beach had its own police department, yeah.
And who was outraged at the Acosta plea deal and enlisted with the names blacked out, I think about 106 victims and descriptions that were kind of redacted to hide the identity. But most of them were discussions about how girls in the local high schools were recruited to be masseuses that turned into sex situations, and that they'd have maybe some older high school girl would go to the
right now. This is in New York or the mansion in Florida or both.
This is Florida, yeah.
and say, would you like to make $200? It's easy. You get to meet this rich guy who's all involved in this glamorous world of beauty contests and modeling and everything. So the girls would go over there, and this is all laid out in this document on the internet, probably 15 years ago, where the 106 mini case histories, and the police officer is saying, what the hell is going on that this guy gets to spend only nights in the jail, and it's a total sweetheart deal, and the investigation is over. Am I getting that more or less right, Wayne?
Yeah, and the one detective who retired, he basically leaked with redactions his files to the Miami Herald, and I got to say the Miami Herald was on this story. You know, it's very rare when a newspaper these days takes that chance, but they did. And Julie Brown, who was their lead reporter on that, was she's still investigating it. I don't think she's with the Herald any longer. But this detective was really pursuing it, and then all of a sudden he became ill. He was 50 years old, and the obituary said he died after a short illness. One of the interesting things he did is when he was with the Palm Beach Police Department, he installed a camera system on the island. You know how almost everybody that lives on that island is a billionaire, and it's like a who's who of big money.
Not which only island, thing. Wayne, are you talking about? Little St. James or?
No, I'm talking about Palm Beach Island,
yeah.
where Mar-a-Lago is. And by the way, Epstein at least hired one girl, underage girl, who was working as a towel girl at Mar-a-Lago, and he hired her into his ring, and she recently supposedly committed suicide in Australia.
Didn't Trump we're going to go to break here in a minute, but how did he get from the going home during the day in Florida with the sweetheart deal to getting arrested into a maximum security prison where he supposedly killed himself?
That's a good question. He would get into the thing about when he was in the Metropolitan Detention Center. He was apparently Trump's Attorney General Barr, who, by the way, Barr's father was the guy instrumental in hiring Epstein as a math teacher at the Dalton School in Manhattan, a private
without a college degree.
Yeah, without a college degree.
That's pretty special. We got to go let's go to break here for real quick. SP Futures down 1, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hi, this is Audrey Johnson at Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Sellers, if you're wondering if it's the right time to sell your home, call me and I will be happy to provide you with a free market analysis and a personalized sales program for your property. I will help you get the right information to maximize your returns in this economy. Buyers, it is the time to look for the home of your dreams. What you couldn't afford 2 years ago is available now. Don't get caught in the rent price spiral that's sure to come. Plus, if you buy or sell a home from me at Home Source Realty, you will get a free 40-inch flat-screen TV at your closing. Call me at 708-349-3456 or email me at audreyjohnson@realtor.com for more information and details on this offer.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. This could be one of the toughest investment climates that I have ever seen. It's very difficult for someone to decide between risk-free investments like treasuries or CDs, corporate bonds at all-time low rates, or the stock market, which right now is somewhat unloved. On the other hand, if you have wealth, you are an investor and should be concerned about income and risk. Like everyone knows by now, the PTI Securities has a 14-year investment program called the Protect Index Program that has served our clients well for a long time. I think, however, that people associate that program with new cash investing, and that is somewhat true. What you may not know is that PTI also uses the same concepts and risk parameters to help clients with individual stock positions, especially a concentrated stock position. How many of you have your stock sitting in a brokerage firm where, if you ever felt the need for protection or income enhancement strategies, there'd be no one with a clue on how to help you? Are you really comfortable with those large concentrated stock positions? Ever think of talking about ways to possibly adjust the risk or income potential? It can only happen if that stock is in an account with a firm like PTI. And again, I can't think of a firm like PTI, with the Chief and others averaging 15 years of floor trading. Give us a call or contact PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Email the show 24 hours a day at stocksandjocks@live.com or give us a call, 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. You can follow us on Twitter, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, and be sure to friend the chief, Tom Howe, on Facebook. Stocks and Jocks, Monday through Friday mornings on 7:50 a.m. in Chicago in Northwest Indiana, 12:40 a.m. downtown, and 14:70 a.m. in Chicago Heights, or you can stream us live at stocksandjocks.net.
Blowing off back stocks, Jocks. Look, we got some commercials out of the commercial vault there somewhere. S&P futures down $1.75. NASDAQ futures up 21. Kind of a slow morning here. Dow futures down 92. Individual stocks, not much. Caterpillar down $1.62. Goldman Sachs down 382. Not much going on in any of that stuff. Nvidia's up $1.20. Again, it's, you know, they go up every day, but that's okay. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 208. That's 0.9%. FTSE up 31.3%, CAC line up 74 point, that's a full 1%. The over in Asia, so we got a bullish day going on over there. Nikkei up 237.6%, Hang Seng down 18, and I call that flat for those guys. Shanghai up 13.4%. Bonds, this has been kind of the one we had to watch the last couple of days. 10 years up again today of 4.48. It keeps looking like it's going to go to 4.5, but then it can't stay above that. The Bund unchanged, 2.70. Oil up 68 cents, 67.06. Still not showing much. Brent up 39 cents, 68.91. Natural gas up 4 cents, 3.59. We've got gold down 26 bucks, 33.32. It seems like it's lost its momentum to the upside. Really not going down much, but it's stopped going up. Silver up 2 cents, down 2 cents, 38.10. Copper still at 5.50 after the tariff on the copper announcement. The U.S. dollar is up a little bit as the euro is down to 115.7. It was over 117 a couple of weeks ago, so it's down, it's 1%. That's a lot. British pound is 133.9. It was over 135. Again, it's kind of a lot. Crypto down 1,400 bucks, 117.766. That's the Bitcoin. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. No baseball. Very boring.
Yes, no baseball. Not until today. So the only thing we have on sports is that the Chicago Sky lost to the Dream 86-49. In Chicago, it is currently 68 degrees with a high of 72, less humid, and cloudy skies. In Phoenix, it's 84 with a high of 102. They are going to be hazy, sunny, and hot with thunderstorms late this afternoon. In regards to traffic, right now, the travel times inbound from Montrose on the Kennedy is 27 minutes. And the
that's out, a lot.
Yeah, well, we're rising. The outbound on the reversibles is 17. The inbound Eaton's on the inner to downtown is now at 43 minutes, but again, this is the Thursday, the last day. Outbound is 49 to Lake Cook. Inbound Eisenhower. Inbound to Wolf is 35. The outbound to Wolf is 26. On the Dan Ryan, we have inbound from 95th is 26. And the outbound to the Dan Ryan is, that's a lot better on the Jane Byrne interchange, is 11 minutes. Back to you, Chief.
Guys, this topic is so close to me because, again, we had a couple of these decisions when I was the board, nothing like this. But in terms of what are you trying to accomplish? I sent you guys a thing about all the phone numbers and everything. What do you get if all of a sudden tomorrow, I'll use my age and say in the newspaper, there's a list of 200 names whose phones were on this island? This is 10 years ago, so you can't prosecute anybody. You don't really know what anybody did there. You don't know if one of the guys was like Wayne, who snuck over there just to see who else was there and was taking notes the whole time. You can't really, unless you find some of the girls that said, this guy did this to me and blah, blah, blah. It's a tough decision for Trump or anybody. I honestly believe that. Plus, if it turns out, I mean, it is. I mean, it's not saying that a lot of people don't want to know. I mean, as I mentioned to Lou, the same people who, you know, essentially threw people out of office for having some young guy playing volleyball with some young girl and breaking her nose, clearly don't want a bunch of people, especially if half of them are Arabs and supposedly so religious, coming over here and messing around with 14-year-olds that somebody provided. I mean, nobody wants that to happen. But on the legal side of it, it's somewhat of a it's a tough one for him. And if he finds out that the CIA wrote this guy a check, or the Mossad, or somebody, so they could keep a track on all the Arabs that were over there, I don't know that you want that out there either, you know, in terms of who the hell is controlling the CIA? I mean, who are these crooks? I mean, I don't know why he brought it up, because there's a no win there. It's like discovering Lyndon Johnson or George Bush was behind JFK. I mean, what do you do with this?
Well, Tom, here's let me jump in, because you've hit on something that is rarely talked about, that's kind of a pet issue of mine, which is, before embarking on the name part of this, it's important to have context, and here's two elements of the context. First of all, just because somebody is photographed with somebody, or takes a trip on an airplane or goes to a party, doesn't mean that they're involved in scandal. Because politicians take photos, celebrity takes photos with people all the time. So a photo is mildly useful as an indication, but that's only part of the issue. The second and kind of final bit of context here is that one of the things that people have gotten into this, as I have to some extent, learn, is that you think in the popular culture, well, it's the older guy putting pressure on the young people all the time. Well, that's much of it, most of it, but there is also a whole cottage industry. I don't know if it's an industry, but there's an incentive for young people to want to get involved in this, some of this stuff. And maybe they've got handlers, maybe they're looking for career advice, or maybe they're an outright prostitute. But there's all kinds of complexities when you get into this and you really want to find out what's going on. One, people may not have been doing anything. Two, it could be setups and extortion and everything. So it's not just get a list and publish it. It's think what else is going on, with a certain amount of the kind of fair play that you articulated, that maybe there's more to it than just a name on a list or a photograph. So
I would just add to that. Of all the people involved in this Epstein matter, we've got Ghislaine Maxwell, whose father was Robert Maxwell. He was a major league publisher. Also, he was spying for Israel and the Soviet Union. Some people think he was a triple agent. He was also spying for MI6 in Britain. But when you look at the Epstein matter, the guy who for about 10 years was as close as you could get to his operations was only one person, and that was Donald Trump. In Mar-a-Lago, in New York, we have like scores of victims who have come out and talked about what happened to them. Some of them are still Jane Doe's, others we know their names. And Trump has been basically identified many of their depositions as actually forcibly raping young girls along with Epstein up at the mansion in Manhattan. Another thing about the mansion, that was basically a gift to Jeffrey Epstein from Les Wexner, who's the guy who founded Victoria's Secrets. We talk about why would teen girls be coming into New York looking for jobs as models. It's because that was one outfit that would actually pay them money to model for their catalogs and whatnot.
And it's not just them. There's the Gap and a whole bunch of other clothing stores. And so you're in the world of photography, modeling, and how do you get into that? Beauty contests. And so,
that's right.
By the way, that to a smaller extent, I knew some people who when we were younger, Chicago had nothing like New York, but they had some reasonable agencies here. I don't know if they do anymore. And these young ladies were all, I never saw anything untoward. I mean, I didn't know anybody well enough, but they all kind of came over here. They all lived sort of together because it was a lot of them were from overseas. They were all in that, I don't know if anybody was 16, but they were clearly were at least early college age. I'm going to say that if I knew anybody who was under 18, I wouldn't have known. But they were young, and they all kind of hung together, and they pretty much worked their ass off. It's all day long. It's 10, 12 hours every day. I mean, it's you wouldn't think modeling, but I mean these girls. I mean it was they didn't have the time to mess around too much. Now, would they have been susceptible to some money other places? Because I don't know how much they made. I don't know. I mean, everybody's susceptible to some degree, I guess.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Particularly if they were very, very pretty. They were a runaway. They come to New York, and people say, "Oh, you're pretty. Would you like to come to this nice party? There's going to be all kinds of rich people there involved in photography, television, movies." And you know, you're 17, 16 years old. Why not?
I don't know if I ever saw anybody that young here, but maybe they were. I think they were.
Well, I mean, Chicago, they had, you know, big catalog operations.
Yeah, it was mostly catalog stuff. So,
awards,
yeah, I think that, but I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of call for 16-year-olds in a Sears catalog, you know. But
No.
I'm not. By the way, I wasn't talking about your encounters.
A long time ago. This is the 80s.
We're talking about the Wexner Mansion. And
I was just trying to concur that the girls are here without a family. A lot of them were from Europe. And it's, you know, and they're alone except for the group they're with.
Yeah, we talk about the Wexner Mansion. Let's get back to the jocks portion. Okay, so Les Wexner is a multi-billionaire living in outside of Columbus, Ohio, in a super rich gated community. He's also the guy that funded the medical center at Ohio State University in Columbus. By the way, it was the sports doctor that was working with, you know, because of that philanthropy from Wexner was going on for years with Jim Jordan, the assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State. Said, "Oh, I didn't see that going on in the showers." I mean, it all, you know, it's amazing how a lot of these scandals, sometimes it's a Venn diagram and they start to overlap.
All right, so how did Epstein get in the Max prison thing? How did he get nailed in? After he gets out of jail in Florida, what do you do? Leave the country or something? And then when he came back,
he was on a regular trip. God knows what he was doing in Paris on his private plane. He lands back here. So the Southern District of New York was investigating him. They had enough. They indicted. They arrested him. Indicted him. By the way, that was James Comey's daughter who was just fired yesterday. Obviously on orders of Trump and Attorney General Pam Bondi. By the way, Pam Bondi was the Florida Attorney General from 2011 to 2019 when there was a lot of efforts to try to get the charges on Epstein renewed down here. And of course, she blocked it. So this thing has many different angles. Anyway, so Epstein is in prison. They said he tried to commit suicide once, and then they put him in solitary. But now we have this missing segment of the tape. The two guards were sleeping. He supposedly tied towels together and hanged himself in his cell. And a lot of people just aren't buying that story.
Including 60 Minutes and Epstein's family have looked into this and seen that the medical examiner's report was very brief, very cursory, and highly suspicious that he killed himself.
Well, if you follow the cash, and somebody somewhere gave Epstein all this cash, what makes you think that those people, whoever those people are, didn't get what they wanted out of the deal? That they actually have compromised some of the people from Saudi and some of the people here?
Well, that's the way it works.
Yeah, yeah. And it wouldn't be the first time.
And one of the things Wayne and I have learned, partly through one of Wayne's sources, who for a brief multi-year period was quite loquacious about this, is how a lot of the sex workers actually work cooperative with various intelligence agencies or even law enforcement, because they're literally in a position to find out information when the pants.
I would put position in quotes for that.
Well, I mean, you look at the history of J. Edgar Hoover, who had a file on everybody. Just because he's dead, it doesn't mean that doesn't still work.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it definitely does. In fact, here's an example, and I'll obscure any part of the location or anything. But in strip clubs, we were told, Wayne and I were told by somebody who's very knowledgeable about this, that sometimes in the back room, particularly the high-end ones, they got the one-way mirrors and the cameras rolling, so that the purpose is to get film of the customers that they can identify who might be judges or government people in a position to sign contracts.
Is that why you guys always have the mustache and the beard?
Hey, those Groucho Marx classes come in for, you know, come in handy sometimes.
But a hidden component of the profitability of at least some places, maybe run by the mob in this particular case, is to bring in legitimate people in town for a convention, or maybe they work there, who think that they're going to sneak into a strip club and get lap dances, and meanwhile, the whole operation is designed to get them on film so that they will be beholden in their, whether it's judicial decisions or contracting decisions, to the people who have the tape.
Well, if people can think about it, somebody's doing it. We know that, right?
Oh, they're doing it all right. It's just...
I go back to, I don't know... You know, I mean, it's not like I feel too much for him, but I'd feel for Trump on this one. I think he's kind of lying. I don't know what he can do with this mess.
The interesting thing is, of all the scandals he's been involved with, the criminal cases, civil suits, because his own base is now turning on him on this one because they thought he was the one that was going to expose everything. And now they're waking up saying, oh, my God, our Messiah, he's part of the whole problem. You know, it's like a snake. When a snake has nothing else to eat, it starts to eat itself. And I think that's what's going on.
I mean, I don't know what – I'm just saying I always try, no matter who it is, even if it's somebody I don't necessarily like, any given topic, I try and put myself – in the same decision, and I'd say, if that's sitting in front of me in the Oval Office, I got a problem with it. I can't put 400 names out there, and I don't know what they did. Just happened to be there.
He doesn't have to. By the way, why does he have to fire Comey's daughter, who was the prosecutor? Why does he have to say?
Because he can't.
I think it's unfair about Maxwell being in prison. You know, I mean, this is interference. They're not. The president's not supposed to be doing this.
Andrew, all power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we're watching it in front of our very eyes.
Absolutely.
Hey, could I, before we go, provide some good news out of this? Remember at the start of the show, I talked about this Birkenfeld, the Swiss banker, had the 19,000 names, and he went to the Justice Department, and he talked to a top official there, Kevin Dowling, who I later met and saw in action, because he left the Justice Department and ended up representing Paul Manafort in Manafort's tax cases. But at any rate, Birkenfeld goes to prison. Acosta is one of his prosecutors, along with this Dowling. But listening in was an IRS agent or two, and they thought 19,000 big-time tax cheats in the U.S., we'd like to see that list. They got the list, Tom, and they recovered something like $13 billion, with a B, dollars for the IRS out of these 19,000 people civilly. And with a new lawyer, Birkenfeld, had his lawyer said, you know, there's whistleblower money in this. So Birkenfeld got $120 million from the U.S. government for helping recover $13 billion
as a key TAM thing.
Is that how Wayne got that massive place in Florida on the Intercoastal whistleblower money?
We've probably heard the story, but of how. One of the White Houses, we can get into which one later, but wanted to investigate Wayne. They said, who's funding Wayne? And their the investigator, private attorney, comes up to Washington and says, I don't think anybody's funding him. He drives a jalopy. He lives in a 400-square-foot apartment. And when she became a whistleblower, she decided to go to Wayne. So that's how we know about a lot of this stuff.
God. Well, if you identify yourself as a whistleblower, that must put a target on your behind.
Oh, it does. It did in that person's case, anyway.
What, in terms of the, you know, I just, you don't want anybody being thrown out there that didn't do anything. And just putting names out there for people. But I'm surprised that this is kind of a bad read of Trump on his people, because his people, they want to know if there's a bunch of people from the Middle East over here messing around with young girls, and there's people who feel that stuff should be stopped, and you know, I don't know whether is this enough of a threat to the people that were doing it, to where next time people think their name is going to get out there and they stop doing it, or is it still going on someplace?
Well, let's just connect a couple dots. Epstein has said that he introduced Melania to Trump.
Well, so he did.
There's a thread on the sweater that people do not want to start pulling. Like, how would Epstein, if true, now all of this needs to be investigated, which is what people don't want to do, but how would Epstein know Melania?
Well, she was a model. Wasn't she a skier or something?
Yeah. Yeah, she was a model. And, apparently he introduced her at a party at this place called the Kit Kat Club in New York. Which,
wasn't she a skier and hurt her leg or something and became a model or some story like that?
Oh, no, that was the first wife.
Okay.
Ivana. Yeah.
But this one...
Ivana was from Czechoslovakia, and she started dating this Austrian skier who was in the Olympics, and then they got married, and that got her travel documents to go to Canada, and then she comes up across the border, and then somehow Trump meets her, and they get married. The interesting thing about that is Ivana's father was a intelligence asset for the Czechoslovak secret police that was working hand in glove with the KGB back in those days, and it looks like maybe she was a honey trap.
Well, I mean, but his current wife is inordinately attractive. It doesn't surprise me that she wasn't a model, or she's a model.
Let me step in and get in here. In right after Trump announced for president, I think it was 2015, both the New York Daily News and the New York Post, and the Post, of course, is owned by Trump's ally, Murdoch, they published front-page nude photos of Melania from her modeling career. And so, again, this is on the front pages of very popular American newspapers, and yet it's gone into the memory hole. Well, what kind of modeling was she doing exactly? That's out there.
But that was a different era. I mean, every actress had a nude scene. Jeannie Buss was naked at the Forum. I mean, it was a different time. Now people think that's horrendous. In those days, you know, so what? Somebody showed their butt. What's the difference?
Well, it's not a butt.
Right now, where do you think we are with a lot of this stuff? I mean, the ICE is having somewhat of a pushback in a lot of areas. We're at the end here. We gotta launch ourselves a few topics for next week. I'll have to email you guys. This one, I think we've kind of beaten this one to death. I think nothing comes of it, and I'm not so sure that maybe that's what should happen. I don't know. What do you think?
I think because he's losing his base, and now you see some grumblings from some of his heretofore they were his sycophants in Congress. You know, it seems like now they're grumbling because they're listening to their constituents. I think this could be the scandal that may break him. It's something that we've known about, or many people have known about for quite some time, but this may be the one that does it.
Is it because he called the people that are getting his base is, I'm not talking about the people who voted for him, said his base is probably what, 20% of the population, and I'm going to say the Democrats, they're for whatever agenda they have. I mean, I'm a former Democrat. I don't know what the hell their agenda is, but it's probably 20%, and there's this 60 in the middle. I mean, if Trump loses 5 to 10% of his base, well, he's not running again. But are they gonna? I mean, does he even? He said, "What did he say? Didn't even care yesterday."
It's the part of his base that is the most apt to believe in conspiracy. This is the QAnon crowd. These people are not going to go away. As a matter of fact, they're going to get louder.
Yeah, but I believe in conspiracy. So do you guys? That doesn't put us in that group, does it?
These are the people that believe that JFK Jr. faked his death and he was going to come back, and you know all this nonsense. The Earth is flat and the moon is made of green sheet. I mean, but these are the people that are going to get out there and be the most vociferous. They're the ones that call these talk shows in the far right ecosphere, infosphere. And those people will not now ever trust him again, and I think that's a problem
we got to dash the last comment. If you got people, you know, essentially busting down doors to find somebody who's been here 20 years, I mean, I don't know if this is happening, but it's the accusations are there.
Yeah.
And finding somebody, if you're willing to go that far to find a quote criminal, you can't on the other side let this one go. I mean, you're the one he's created his own environment.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you're absolutely right.
But it still doesn't mean that for you or me and Andrew together, it would be a tough call.
Yeah.
He's caught. I mean,
he's caught.
Yeah.
and he's acting like it. Look at how he reacts to everything. This is the one that really I think has gotten his goat, because he's trapped. Where does he go?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll see. We see every day. By the way, did you guys get the memo on the copper? And yesterday, that was worth 200 points in the NASDAQ. We're firing Powell, no, we're not. I got to get on these. Why aren't you guys getting me on these memos?
Well, I invested 10 bucks in Bitcoin just to have a reason to look at it. Now it's up. Yesterday it was up over. My $10 investment was over $24. So, you know.
There you go. But if you try and sell it, somebody would probably take a $10 commission. See, right back to 10. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 73. You guys have a good weekend.
You too.
Jimmy, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.